Hey guys, Brad Nickum here with Tasting Tequila with Brad. I got a really great treat today. One of my favorite Blancos and the owner of this tequila, Antermanas, Alan, is going to be here to tell us about the product. So stay tuned. Hey guys, I got Alan here. Alan, how are you doing today?
Everything is good. It's a regular day here at my house, actually.
Fantastic. Now, I think I'm coming to you from a little town called McCordsville, Indiana, which is on the northeast side of Indianapolis, Indiana. And if I'm not mistaken, you're coming to us from Mexico, right?
Yeah, from Guadalajara. Yeah.
From Guadalajara. Fantastic.
Yeah, it's a couple minutes away from Tequila, Matitán, and, you know, the valley region of Tequila.
Now, is that where you're originally from?
Yes, I'm from Guadalajara, born, raised in Guadalajara. My family is actually not from Guadalajara, but I was raised here since I was a kid. Actually, I just grew up a few blocks away from where I'm living right now, so it's great, great city.
Super cool. Yeah. Well, we met on the phone or on WhatsApp back in August when my wife and I actually came to Tequila, and we have to say the Guadalajara airport is one of the best airports we've ever been to. That place was fantastic.
I have a good collection actually of tequilas. There's a few places in the world you can get as good quality tequilas on the bar as Guadalajara. Most of their airports usually got just the regular commercial spirits. But in Guadalajara, you could get Cascawin, you could get Tapatio, you could get a couple of good tequila there.
We looked at the tequila store in the airport. Not so much there.
There's a store. It's called Mercado. Yeah, they sell all the Siete Leguas. They sell they don't say Cascawin. They sell Tapatío. The 110 and the regular one.
No kidding. The only store we found in the airport was just one big major brand.
Yeah, all of I know that brand. One. Yeah, I know that one.
And good for them, right? They're selling to people and people like it. So tell me, how did you get into this tequila business?
Okay, so I actually, my background is an engineer, design engineer. And first of all, I'm 28 years old. I'm not that old. And
I knew you were a youngster.
Yeah. So as a Mexican, we always like our tequila. And me being from Guadalajara, I always try to different stuff. So when I was around two, I moved to study abroad to Valencia in Spain. Mm-hmm. So with me, I brought, of course, tequila. So I took actually a tasting course before going to Spain with Partida, Tequila Partida.
No kidding.
And it blew my mind because I wasn't, I was drinking as a youngster, 22, 21. I was regular drinking whatever it was, you know, available to us. So I met the brand Partida and I fell in love with the tasting techniques they gave me. And actually, those are the ones I keep. After 6-7 years later, I'm still drinking that. It was the same way Partida taught me how to do it. So I brought that to Valencia, and I start teaching my Erasmus or my abroad friends in Valencia, from people from Germany, France, Vienna. And I start teaching them how to drink tequila because they have this misconception of drinking tequila. Something, you know, in Europe, you only get really, really like poor quality tequilas, Sierra and things like that. But because that's the market and it started. So it's okay. That's how actually Mexico started that way. Then the US and Europe is in the same. It's right now in those same steps. So I felt like I was like kind of an ambassador of tequila. Ambassador of Mexico. When I was there, I would study for 8 months, and I came back and I was like, I want to get more into this. So it was more into a hobby. It was more just getting to get the spirits, mezcal and tequila. I was getting to that. Then raicilla came. I started drinking raicilla, and then the pandemic hit, and I started designing furniture. So I was Guadalajara is a big. It's not only a tequila business. It's Guadalajara is big on furniture. And my family, it's been in the furniture business since 35 years now. So for me, it was, you know, the safe choice was going into furniture. I was designing and manufacturing furniture. And one day I was thinking of sending my furniture to the US. So I wanted to get some advice on exporting. So my dad contacted me with Jan Monroy, which is now the CEO and co-founder of Entre Manos also. And I went to his office and he was like, okay, I don't know anything about furniture, but I know what I do is export tequila and mezcal, and I help small brands to get a repackaging and rebranding so they can sell things in the US. So I was like, oh, that's interesting. So he started helping me with the furniture. Then we found out that it was just not good. It wasn't a good business to just send furniture to the US.
Sure.
So he was like, no, I want to keep helping you because I feel like I let you down in a way. So I was like, why don't you come with me and you help me design bottles for this mezcal and tequila companies to send it to the US. So I was like, oh, that's something I like. I like tequila, I like mezcal. I'm really into spirits. And I am a designer. I'm the engineer. So I was like, okay, sure. So I started working with him. We had a company. We helped a couple of mezcals. We wanted to send tequilas and mezcal to China. So we were doing a couple of things. And then the opportunity came in to a brand. For our own, not just... because we were helping other brands. Sure. So that's how Entre Manos came in. So I got into the project to be in charge of all the thing about production, the rope, the bottle, everything about the final product. And then is when I met Jaime Villalobos, which is the master distiller. And we built a team of, right now we're 7 and a couple of other advisors. But we started just, it was just 4 of us, a couple of us. So fantastic. That's how it started in tequila. It was, I wanted to do furniture and I end up, selling tequila. Yeah. No, I had to close my business because the tequila was just something I felt more passionate about. I was like, no, I love this. I love to work with tequila. So I had to close my business with furniture and I'm really happy I did.
That's awesome. So now instead of giving somebody someplace to sit in the furniture, now you help them fall out of it with the tequila. Yeah.
that's a good analogy.
So how did the name and what does the name Entre Manos mean?
Okay, Entre Manos, in Spanish, Entre Manos means between hands. You know, in the top on the cap, you see there's 2 hands, holding agave. So in order to... Entre Manos mean it's when you do the jima, when you harvest the agave, it has to be between hands. You have to toss it around all the way to the big truck, and you have to cut it with the hands. Then you have to mill it, distill it, ferment it, bottle it, then put the rope around, and everything has to be between hands. There's nothing you can do in the tequila world, only you. It has to be between hands. It has to be between someone else. So at the end, you cannot... like toast to cheers if it's not between hands. You cannot do it with yourself. You just gonna go like salute.
Yeah, cheers.
Has to be with someone else, has to be between hands. So it's a way to say let's respect all the hands, all the people involved in the process, all the time that was involved. For example, respecting the time, honoring the time that was for the agave to grow, for the 7 years to mature. And the time to ferment, the time to distill, the time to put the rope. You know, the tequila Entre Manos, it takes us around 2 to 3 minutes, depending who is doing it. Sometimes 5 minutes to put the rope. So for me, every time I have a box, I have maybe 10 boxes, cases of tequila, just empty bottles of Entre Manos. I don't want to, throw them away because I know how long it took to make. So for
somebody to make that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I usually we like to say to tell people to use it as a base for flowers or something like that, because it was way too much work into it just to throw it away. And actually, the first lot of Entre Manos, lot number 1, which went to Spain, I think it was 6,000 bottles, and out of those 6,000 bottles, I think I did around 2,500 of them. I did it myself.
You did it yourself. Wow, that's pretty awesome.
Because we didn't have actually the machine. I built the machine, I designed it and built myself. I welded the machine, I printed everything. And it was only one machine, and I was the only one that knew how to do it, how to use it.
Wow.
So after the 2,500 bottles I did, I had someone needs to help me. So I teach the the ladies at the distillery to do it by hand and do it with a machine so we could work faster because we were really going really, really slow. So then I designed 5 more machines to do it. But at the end, still, it's something that you have to do it by hand. The machine just aids you, helps you just helps turn you. The bottle, but you have to put it by hand still.
Which really fits into the hands that you're talking about.
Yeah.
And one of the things I say to people about tequila all the time, because I love to share the story of the spirit, right? I've been a tequila drinker for a long time. And what I tell people all the time is this little glass of tequila is it's sipping, 7 to 8 years of sunshine. And it's sipping a spirit that has really gone through the hands of many people from the farmer, from the jimadoras, from the person that is cutting it in halves and quarters and cutting out the cogoya and stacking it into an autoclave or a stone oven. And then, putting it through a tahuna or putting it through the roller mill and then watching the people work in the bottling. And, in the States, we're kind of used to a whole bunch of just manufacturing and not a human touching a bottle, right? I don't know if you're familiar with Maker's Mark. It's a bourbon, right? And every bottle's dipped into a thing of wax. And that is still done by hand. They sit at a conveyor belt and there's people on each side that take that bottle off, dip it in that wax and put the bottle back on there. And, they've kept the spirit of the worker to do that. And I think that's really neat. But you don't find that in the state a lot. And a lot of people here think, and I'm going to pour it in a shot glass and I'm going to lick some salt and then swallow some lime. And they're used to that party shot. And to try to help educate people of what tequila really is and how to really respect what's in your glass and where it came from, learning the story of the name is that's so awesome. That's a great piece of it. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Now, what does the rope represent something as well?
Yeah, actually, it's just to resemble to the hand craftsmanship of something. And also, when you have to remember something, you have to you sometimes tie something around your finger.
Yeah.
So
that's awesome.
That's to remember all the time that it took to get the tequila done. So some people, when we started and we had the design, because the design was made in Barcelona, so it was one of the best companies, design studios in the world, designed the bottle. And they gave me a render. And I was like, okay, so how am I going to put the rope and what type of material is it? And they were like, okay, my work was done when I designed the bottle. That's your problem.
That's on you.
Yeah, so you had to figure out how to do it. So it took me 6 months to figure out the rope, how to tie it around and everything. And sometimes people would just go and like, why didn't you just put a label with the texture? And, I'm like, no, I really want to do that. It's easier if I do that. It's easier if I just a label with the rope texture or something like that. But I was like, this is something people will remember and that we will remember every time we do it. So it's like, no, let's not cut corners and do it the way it was meant to be and to represent that same thing. So every time I tie it, because the high proof, it's only 1800 bottles. Out of those 1800 bottles, I think I made more than half. I think I did around 1200 bottles. I did myself by myself.
Wow.
That's awesome. Because we didn't have time. The guy was supposed to do it, just Bellona. So I was like, I had to do it myself. So every time I do a bottle, I was like, this is going to the hands of someone else. So I kind of look if what are they gonna look on this? They're gonna appreciate. They're gonna every people that see the bottle, they always go like this. They always touch to see what material.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the first thing I did when I got mine was I was like, wow, that is awesome. Like. Yeah.
So we know it's a big part of the product, and we want to keep it like that. And people will say like, oh, so how are you going to do it if you want to, scale it up to, I don't know, do thousands and thousands of bottles a day, like just more hands.
Yeah. And that's more people in your area that you get to help. And that's really pretty awesome.
And actually that's why we started Cultivando Lazos, which is an, how do you call it? Association, a foundation.
Okay, foundation.
To help empower women at the tequila industry. And right now we're helping them to establish their own company. Because now the ladies that used to work at the distillery, are no longer working there due to any different circumstances, like a widow or something like that, they're going to be the ones now doing the rope, and they're going to get paid straight instead of, you know, interbe. So they're going to have new businesses, and the idea is to bring all the ladies around the community to not only do entremanos, but to do different brands of labeling or bottling, whatever they can, so they can have the control of their finances and to make them believe and understand that their work is really valuable for all of the industry. So we are actually working with that right now. The next lot is going to be 100% labeled by the self-employed women's and the Amatitan.
That's fantastic. I mean, I know a lot of brands that are really working hard at giving back to the communities. And it's something that a lot of people lose sight of. Capitalism one, everybody else zero, right? And thank God for capitalism. But to know that a company is doing something that is, you know, sustainable, responsible, helping their people, that puts even more meaning really behind what you do. And that's what's hard for a brand to be able to do, is put that out there and tell people that. So I'm glad that we get to tell your story a little bit, because it's really important. But that's awesome.
Yeah, thanks for hearing that.
How did you end up at NOM 1522? So did you do a lot of like checking with other distilleries or?
No.
Okay, so there's another story there. I love it.
Yeah, so the thing is that we started this. The opportunity to do entremanos came up from a friend of Jan's. And he's a doctor, and he was like, okay, I know a friend of mine, he's 60, maybe 70 years old. And he's like, okay, a friend of when I was studying medicine, he's also a master distiller, and I want him to do the tequila. So we went with him, and he was like, we talked about what we wanted and everything. And he was like, the best fit for this tequila is going to be my son. So the guy we went in is Jaime Villalobos Diaz, which is the father of Jaime Villalobos, Sousa.
I say he's a Sousa, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Jaime Jimmy, our master distiller, he's from the Sousa family. And his dad is also a master distiller. He's not from the Sousa family, but he's really involved in the tequila industry. And he's been doing tequila for more than 50 years now. So he was like, okay, the best fit for your product is going to be my son. We met with Jimmy. Jimmy was just like it was the perfect fit. And he was like, the only place I feel comfortable working, it's at Hacienda de Oro, 1522, which is where Tequila Partida be.
Sure, that's where they started.
They started. So for me, it was like, okay, this is nice. This is the first time I actually experienced something. It was, you know, in that same place. So the thing is that the Partida family has been doing tequila for more than 25 years now. And they've been agave growers for more than 50 years. And like
there's partidas all over, right?
Yeah,
there's
in Arenal,
so many people.
Adictivo, Cava. There's a lot of partidas, which is a big family in Arenal, right? and Amatitan. So they started doing partida and everything. Then Partida moved from the distillery to the NOM. So they started from the ground up now. They took another NOM and everything. That's why they got at 1522, which is, you know, the higher the number, the newer the distillery. Yes.
Right.
So Jimmy, you know, it's five brothers of the Partida, and Jimmy is considered the sixth brother because he's been working there since 15 years now. And he's not like an employee there. It was like his small lab. Ileana Partida, and back then it was David Partida, Ileana's father, who gave him the freedom to do whatever he wanted in the distillery. So every time he brings a new product, he takes over basically of the distillery, the production and everything. So it's if he wants to, you know, do whatever he wants, it's his free to do. Just as long as he doesn't damage any equipment,
right?
Everything is cool. So he
becomes the magician to make this be as good as it is.
Yes. Yeah, so we have different processes that the distiller had never done before, and it was just all Jimmy's. Jimmy is still, he's a purist on what he's doing. He's saying that he wants to do, the best tequila was already invented. So he's like, I'm not trying to invent the wheel. It's not possible. The best tequila was already invented. So let's try to do the thing. It was just to do the thing that was already done in the best way. So sure. His philosophy before the additive free movement, before everything of that, he was doing the tequila the right way, which he say way as water, agave, and yeast, the right way. Yep. So it's only three ingredients.
Right. So, and you guys are, you're lowlands agaves, correct?
Yeah, Valles. Yeah.
So lowlands agaves and then high pressure autoclave. Is that right?
Yeah, it's here's the interesting part about our autoclave. So the Partida, the distillery used to have a brick oven back in 1999. So, but it wasn't that popular back then.
Right.
So the autoclave came in at the early 2000s. So it was the most popular thing. It was the most efficient. People really didn't care about how it was made, just to make it faster. So the autoclave came and they just teared down the brick oven because it wasn't needed. And they kept just two autoclaves. So Jimmy wanted to do something different. He wanted to do the same process, cooking as a brick oven, but we just didn't have it. And it's not like we're going to go cook somewhere else and then bring the cooked agave. So he was like, okay, let's try something different. Basically, it's just, you just have to inject steam into it. The same thing as a brick oven. The difference is time and pressure.
So are you doing a little more what they call low and slow?
It's low and slow. Yeah. So it's a combination of both. So it's 10 hours with high pressure.
Okay.
8 to 10 hours, depending. Sometimes it's 8 hours, slow, high pressure. And instead of opening to cool it down for 12 hours to 10 hours, we just keep it closed for 48 hours, the whole weekend.
Okay. So you're almost getting that low pressure cook for another couple of days before you even open it up then.
We have the same time as a brick oven.
Right. Or if you were doing just a true low pressure autoclave, you're running that same time frame.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
But because you put the high pressure at the beginning, you're going to get a little different notes, more fruit notes. And because of the longer time, the 48 hours, so it's 12, it's almost 60 hours on the oven. So that will give, a different profile. The unfolding of the sugar is going to be richer. So you're going to get more fruit, you're going to get more burn material, organic material, which is going to give you those aromas at the end of the product. So Jimmy is like, okay, we have to adapt to what we have and we have to do it the best way. So then we have a roller mill, regular roller mill, and then we do a natural spontaneous fermentation. No yeast added, whatever it's in the environment.
Whatever's in there, yeah. So letting nature be nature.
Yeah. And I think the one you have, it's what, lot number 5 or 4?
I think this is lot 5, yes.
If it doesn't have anything on the front, that's lot 5. If it has, it's blank.
Yeah, it's blank. And you told me that it was lot 5.
Yeah, it's lot 5. So lot 5 took 9 days to ferment because there was somebody on the distillery that wanted to keep the whole time from January to July. He was like, I'm going to take over the distillery for 6 months. So we were like, okay, we cannot do that. We usually cook the second week of February, because it's when the temperatures start going higher, which is better for us. So we had no choice, and we decided to ferment in January, which is really risky because the mosto could die. So you could go.
It gets too cold in January.
It gets too cold, and the middle of the fermentation simply just stops fermenting, and every must everything is dead, so no longer useful. So it was like, okay, let's take the risk, and we did. And unfortunately enough, it took 9 days to ferment, which is really really long, and it gave this more malolactic notes to it, more lactic notes, and it gave the peppermint side that we had in lot 4 and lot 3. It went a little bit down, which is good for me. I love more into the malolactic notes. I know there's people that doesn't like that cheesy, funky nose, but
I like that. I also like that it's got a real pepperish finish to me, which I usually get that when somebody did fermentation with fibers.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a hotter finish to me. So that I was going to ask you, did you ferment with fibers? Because to me, it has that like long, like peppery finish that would remind me of that.
Usually that's due to the methanol content that you get. We cannot, because we use a roller mill. I don't know if you know this, but when you use a roller mill, the crushing of the fibers is more aggressive, and that will actually produce more methanol during the fermentation. So if you do roller mill and you ferment with fibers, you have a higher, you're going to have a higher methanol level content of methanol.
Right. Also creates a lot of bitterness too, correct? Yes,
a lot of bitterness, and you will get that peppermint finish. So usually when you do Tahona with fibers, you might get that peppermint, but it's not going to be that harsh.
Right.
Now we are going to do, we have, there's a new Tahona finally at the distillery. They're still,
fantastic,
you know, fixing it because it wasn't that efficient. It was around 30 kilos per liter.
It's not good.
They're fixing it. They're fixing it. They're tweaking everything so it make it more efficient. So we might start doing things with fiber. We might start doing half and half, or just a little of a Tahona. We're going to start, you know, mixing, because, you know, we are only a tequila company with Blanco. We don't do Reposado with any H expression. It's only Blanco. That's the way we're going to keep it all the way. And
okay, so your plans to stay just a Blanco and the high proof, and
a Blanco maybe high proof, or whatever different type of experiment.
Yeah, playing around different experiments. Fantastic.
So we're going to do wet fermentation, Tahona. We're going to just, we want people to understand that what the impact of the process will provoke,
will
create on the product, on the final product. It's going to be the same water. It's going to be the same type of cooking, same time of thing. But if you do different things, you're going to have a different profile. So people will understand and will see that on the final product, which is something that Jimmy is really passionate about. And I'm really passionate about. I've learned, I think, 85% to 90% of what I know about tequila from Jimmy. Jimmy's a talker,
awesome,
and he loves, and he studied, and he's also a sommelier. So he really enjoys talking about tequila. And we are doing a special release on this spring, which is going to have a different type of fermentation. I cannot tell you what is it, but later on, I might send you a sample so you can just give it a try.
We'll do an update video.
Yeah.
So deep well water, right? That's what you're using?
Yeah.
Cutting heads, cutting tails, distilling twice, right? Ordinary.
Yeah.
And then, when you guys proof it down, because it's probably coming out at 54.
Yeah.
And then when you proof it down, are you using the same well water, demineralized, or are you just
same
doing regular water?
Same well water. Yes.
Okay.
So that's going to give you the final profile, always.
Yeah, I taste that vegetal mineral taste that you get in Valley tequilas. It's one of my favorite things about the Valley tequilas is having that mineral flavor. And I know a lot of people say that comes from that volcanic water, and I love that piece.
I can tell you out of the whole fermentation, production, distilling, everything, the final profile and the aromas will come from the water.
Yeah.
I know this is kind of a, some people say it's a terroir, del terruño, but I'm just,
water's part of your terroir, right? When you think about
it. Yeah, if you put it that way,
yeah.
In that way, I would say terroir will have actually a great impact on the final product. But that, the idea that I can take agaves from the highlands or the valle, or the Altos de Jalisco, and bring it to the distillery and cook it, it will taste the same. The final product will be the water. Or I can take water from Amatitan.
You know,
G4, he's a big Felipe. He's a master of water.
Three types of water. Yeah. It's amazing.
And you can really taste the difference between that. At the end,
there's
no minerals that can be distilled out of the water.
You
cannot do that. You cannot distill and the small minerals go up and then to the tank. The minerals you get, they will be from the water. And then the terroir will impact, because what minerals are around that deep water or the spring water, rain water. Yeah.
That's why I wanted to know, you know, some people are using a demineralized water to proof down. And to me, I think they're taking that right out of it, you know, because that water is special to each area. So I think that's a big part of it.
For example, in which cases I see that could be a good thing? When you have a specific, for example, Don Fulano has its own yeast, and it's a secret, and it's something they created. So you want to push that out, so those aromas will be on the fermentation because of the yeast.
Right.
you water it down with something which is, has a lot of presence of minerals and has that specific flavor, it might impact on the idea of the yeast. If you want something really clean, you might use demineralized water to proof it down. But it will depend on the profile that you're looking for. Actually, I just uploaded a video about natural yeast and added yeast. And people would say, like, oh, which is better? Like, no, it's depending on the profile. If you want something really specific, you might add yeast, or you want something just whatever the environment wants to give me, do natural yeast. But at the end, there's no wrong and right on this. Right. Either we like to do it the way we do it in Tramanos, but I really like Don Fulano, which is that yeast added. So it's a matter of what the producer wants to have.
And for me, I'll come out to my bar. I probably have 100 bottles right on the bar. Nice. And I'll go, today, I really feel like maybe this is going to be a Sergio Cruz day, right? You know, or today maybe a Felipe day, right? So, and as you can tell, it's an Intramontes day a lot.
That's good. That's good.
Because it is, like I said, I'm a Blanco guy. I do like some repos. But I very seldom drink an añejo or extra añejo. That maybe when it's snowing outside and it's really cold here, I'll make a old fashioned with tequila, or I'll drink an añejo. But for the most part, I go gravitate straight to a blanco. I drink it neat, a room temperature, and I sip on it until I go to sleep at night. That's what I say. So I love watching your videos. I only have one problem.
It's in Spanish.
I don't speak Spanish. And my wife and I are booking a trip. We're coming down in February, and we're going to do a couple days in Tequila and then 4 days in Arandas.
Nice.
And in Tequila, when you talk to the hotels, they speak English. It's pretty easy to book your hotel. When you're booking a hotel in Arandas, they don't speak English. So it's like I'm calling a friend to help get it all put together. So hopefully when we come down in February, we can actually meet up. And get to go grab a drink and see your facility and what you guys do. That'd be really awesome.
Yeah, for sure. You know, here's your home, your distillery, whenever you want. I'll see you in February.
That'd be awesome. Okay, tell people where they can find you. Give me your socials, all of the things out there that you're doing that people can look for. And then I'll put them in the notes as well. This will go out on YouTube. It'll go on my Facebook. It'll go on Instagram. I'll do some teasers on TikTok, and I'll do like a couple of teaser shorts, you know, and reels as well to drive people back to the video. But where can people find you so I can tell them where to find you?
Well, our handles for Instagram is tramanos.tequila. I think in TikTok is the same. Yeah, I think TikTok is the same.
I think so.
And you can get Tramanos basically in the 41 states through e-commerce. So we could, there's passionspirits.com. They have Tramanos. I think Sip Tequila has in Tramanos. Old Town Tequila has in Tramanos if you want to get it online. But you can get it in retail. You could get it in California, basically from the south, all the San Diego to all the north, NorCal. I think we are around 47 total wines are spread around California, Arizona.
Okay.
And we're going to start working on Texas next year. You know, we just started in January because we are a company. We've been here for 2.5 years now, but we just started in the U.S. In January. So we've been working slow, but with a good pace. So we have distribution in California, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. I think that's it right now. But we already have a deal with Texas, Colorado, Illinois, and Michigan. So
you're getting close to me.
Yeah. So actually, I'm in charge of the expansion for next year. For distribution in the U.S. because we want to start, you know, working in different states because we know it's not it's really hard to get distributors to just get the ball rolling. It took us almost 4 months just to get everything done for New York, and it was just crazy. For California, it took us 2 weeks. That's it. And we were selling already.
I was told it's easier to find a distiller, come up with your batch, pick out your bottles, get your label approved, get your import approved, get it into the United States. And then the hardest part is getting it on somebody's shelf so somebody can see it to buy it. And And that's where, you know, I want to try to help, you know, brands that I enjoy as much as I can to let people know. Do you have a website that they can order from directly as well?
It will direct you to Passion Spirits.
Okay.
It's a website within Passion Spirits, which has everything about Entre Manos. It's a dedicated website for Entre Manos. And I think it's the price on that one is $59.99, which is the retail suggested price. So of course, they're going to charge you the shipping and, you know, the regular things.
You got your taxes. So, and yeah, a lot of places you order enough, they waive your shipping fee. So that's a great price for a great Blanco. So I'm looking forward to finding that high proof. I can't wait to try that one.
I'm going to make sure to send you a sample for that one, because I know we might not be getting any soon to Illinois, to Indiana, and we just did 1,800 bottles, and our distributor in California just bought half of it. So,
no kidding, that's awesome. Yeah.
So,
I know how busy you are. I'm really impressed that a 28-year-old guy who's already got his engineering degree, who started another business, figured out, man, I can make tequila work. And then the name and how you've come up with really how it is all about the hands is really impressive to me. I love the bottle. Presentation's a big piece for me. So I keep one of every bottle that I finish. And I actually have a wall. And on Amazon, I've found these clips that screw to the wall that then screw around the bottle so they can hang. So I'm going to float a whole wall of bottles. And my wife gives me a hard time. She made me throw bottles away, because I realize how much work not only goes into the tequila, but a lot of times this is a hand blown glass bottle, putting this rope on, they're putting on this care to it. And then you throw it in the trash. And I was like, no. So there's no bourbon bottles. There's no any other spirit. It's all tequila.
Today. That's good.
There's still a little bit of bourbon over here. I need people to come drink it to give me more tequila shelf space. That's what I say all the time. Alan, I really appreciate you taking your time and sharing everything about it. It's pretty awesome. So
thank you, Brad, for having me. And it was a great time chatting with you.
Perfect. Thanks, Alan.